Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. And we do that because there's so many toxic things out there. But if we know where they are and we know how to avoid them and we know how to take care of our bodies and help support them in processing those chemicals that we're exposed to, first reduce the amount and then help our bodies process them, then we can still live healthy, happy lives, and we don't have to be victims of those chemical exposures. So today is Wednesday, the 8th of January, 2014. And today we're going to be talking about something a little different. Usually we talk about toxic chemicals, but today we're going to talk about toxic electromagnetic fields. And what prompted this show was an article in last Sunday's LA Times, and it was all about an electronics trade show that is happening right now in Las Vegas this week, and the proliferation of many personal and home products that now have smart chips in them. And so it's essentially Wi-Fi everywhere. And they're now calling it the next wave of electronics is going to be the Internet of Things. And virtually every type of product in the near future is going to be connected to your smartphone or your tablet or your computer, collecting information, giving us information, but also sending EMF fields, radio frequencies, and all those things all over the place where they never have been before. I personally don't have Wi-Fi. I don't have a wireless printer on my computer. I don't have a cordless phone. I do have a cell phone that I rarely use, but I try to keep my home to be as EMF-free as possible. So today I invited a gentleman, Orem Miller, who is a certified building biology environmental consultant in Los Angeles, to come on the show and explain how these products can affect our health. Hi, Orem.
Hi, Deborah.
So yesterday, it's very cold here, and yesterday we were talking about heating in Florida, yeah. And yesterday we were talking about heating our houses toxic-free and how to save energy and money doing so. And we were talking about how cold it was in Florida. And my guest in Montana said, oh, I think it was 11 degrees or something. My producer in Pennsylvania, it was -2. So wow. Today it's 52 here, and it's 3 degrees in Pennsylvania. And you're going to tell me it's 75 in Los Angeles, huh?
In a few hours, yes. It's just after 9 o'clock in the morning here, and it's been in the mid-70s. I'm really embarrassed to say.
So I guess you don't need to heat your home.
let me tell you something. Having lived in the upper Midwest in Minnesota before moving here 4 years ago now, I'm not used to the winters here, because in Minnesota and everywhere else in the north, you turn your thermostat on in October and you don't open your windows hardly at all, and you're always at 68, 70 degrees until April or May. But here, we open our windows in the daytime, and in the night, we don't heat the house, and it gets down into the low 50s, so I'm freezing in the morning when I wake up.
Oh, that's nice. Well, it's actually nice for me, because I grew up in Northern California,
yes,
where it was very temperate in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it was, you know, with the fog and everything in the summer. It was Mark Twain once said that the coldest winter he ever spent was the summer in San Francisco.
Yes,
and that
yes.
was about right. I mean, we had warmer winters and colder summers, so it all balanced out. But anyway, we're here to talk about EMFs. And I know that you have quite a lot of experience and knowledge in this field. Tell us how you got interested in it.
Well, I've always been interested in the environment and environmental consulting. And this is a way in which we can help people, help families, to learn about the toxicities that lurk in their homes that they may or may not know about, and the building biology profession, which I know you are aware of and endorse. In fact, you're in Clearwater, correct?
I'm in Clearwater, home of International Institute of Biology, but didn't they move?
Helmut, who just passed away, our
yes.
founder, and lived there, and his wife, or his surviving widow, Susanna still lives there,
Susanna,
of course.
Yeah.
And that was where the headquarters was officially for many years. Our executive director has, you know, wherever the executive director lives is sort of where the active office is. And right now it's a really fine man named Michael Kahn in Santa Fe, Texas.
Yes, I know Michael.
Oh, you do?
Yes, and I was very good friends with Helmut, too. He and Susanna and my husband and I used to go out to dinner together and talk. And
well, your name is familiar to us, Deborah. I know that you've been aware of us and been promoting biology or building biology and all of your great work with, you know, encouraging people to learn about toxicities in their home. And that's so thank you for all of your work over the years.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about what bowel biology is, because I know that not all of our listeners know about what it is.
All right. So the bowel biology profession came from Germany 35 years ago. Anton Schneider is, I believe, an architect who founded the profession 35 years ago. And basically it came out of the rebuilding efforts that were underway in post-World War II Germany, where they literally had to rebuild their housing stock. For better or for worse, a lot of American methods and materials were brought in, which is part of the Marshall Plan, and, you know, that was good, but except that they didn't emphasize the tried-and-true building materials and building methods that were used in Europe over the last centuries and even millennia, where they used post and beam construction and daub and wattle construction, where they had thick walls made out of local materials that were from the local, you know, from the soil, clays and that sort of thing. Materials that have the capacity to breathe, and we don't mean breathing air, we mean breathing moisture that's contained in air. It's called hygroscopicity. So that's hygroscopicity is the capacity of a wall to allow moisture to slowly move through and dry out so that the walls, the materials in the wall, never get moldy. So I actually co-wrote a book with a building biologist in Texas named George Swanson and also Wayne Federer. The three of us wrote Breathing Walls, and that's a 350-page self-published manual that talks all about how to build walls without mold. So that's available through my website and through breathingwalls.com. And my website is www.createhealthyhomes.com. So anyway, out of World War II, post-World War II Germany, there was enough illness that developed in people's lives from the new building materials and methods that were used, and also from the electromagnetic field and declining quality of indoor air. So as a result of that, physicians, individuals who were suffering from this, and builders and architects got together and founded the IBN, and I'm not sure exactly what that stands for in German, but it's the building biology profession, but they call it Baubiologie.
Right.
BAU is the German word for house or building, and Biologie is their pronunciation of our English word, biology. So we translate it as building biology in this country and in the English-speaking world. So over the last 35 years, a whole profession has developed in Germany and throughout Europe, teaching individuals how to assess homes for sources of toxicity. And then that spread to America when Helmut Zia brought this knowledge 25 years ago to America. So he founded the International Institute for Biobiology and Ecology in Clearwater, Florida, where you live. And from there, he had people come and learn the knowledge and become teachers for him. I'm actually an assistant instructor for the EMF courses now. And what we teach our students is training in identification and mitigation of toxicities from buildings, from homes and offices, including indoor air quality, mold, asbestos, lead, radon, natural gas, carbon monoxide, and then natural building materials, like I talk about in Breathing Walls. And then the third thing is the whole area of electromagnetic field. Now, I practiced for many years in the upper Midwest doing the full range of building biology services, so I have experience in that. But 4 years ago, to get out of the cold weather, I moved to Southern California, and I do just EMF here now and work with others in the area in Southern California who do indoor air quality work. So I'm a consultant.
I need to just interrupt you because we need to go to the break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest is Aura Miller, Certified Building Biology Environmental Consultant, and we're going to be talking about EMFs. So stay with us. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Aura Miller, Certified Building Biology Environmental Consultant based in Los Angeles. But you can go to his website, and if you have questions for him, he does consulting all across the country and probably around the world. So you can get in touch, and he can talk to you on the phone or email with you or whatever to answer your questions. His website is createhealthyhomes.com. So, Aura, so why don't you give us a little lesson here about electromagnetic fields? And I know that there's three types, and this is actually the first of three shows that we're going to have you on so that we can talk about each type. But give us an overview and tell us about how people are sensitive, how it can affect otherwise healthy people.
Okay. First of all, there really are four types, but the three major types that we emphasize in the building biology profession are magnetic fields from house wiring. Then there are electric fields from house wiring, which are different from magnetic fields. And you don't measure electric fields with a Gauss meter. You measure them with different meters. And they both come from house wiring. So we'll get into electric fields in detail in one of the upcoming shows. Then the third major group would be all the wireless devices, which we're pretty much talking about today.
Right.
And then the fourth area would be the so-called dirty electricity that represents harmonics of a fundamental frequency that could be the 60 cycle per second or 60 hertz.
Well, we're going to have you on four times because I think we need to do a whole show on dirty electricity.
All right. That's fine.
It's my understanding that if the dirty electricity actually makes you more sensitive to toxic chemical exposures. But let's just stop right there. Let's not talk about that because we're going to talk about radio frequencies today. So we'll address it in the future.
Okay. All four types of EMFs make people sensitive and susceptible to other types of toxicity. So there's a lot of cross-sensitivity. And because we're trained in all of these toxicities in a home, we understand that. And we work with people who are sensitive to both and or don't know that they're sensitive to the other. They may call us up and say they're chemically sensitive, and then they find out that they're electrically sensitive and vice versa. So anyway, sticking with EMFs, the magnetic fields come from outside power lines, which go right through building materials, and you can't shield those, and they're really hard to deal with. The second source of magnetic fields would be wiring errors, which can cause an unbalanced load between the hot and the neutral in these circuits and in cords that you plug in. And then thirdly would be point sources like transformers and motors, but the magnetic field from those drop off within 2-3 feet, fortunately. And then the fourth would be current on grounding paths like water pipes under your floor, believe it or not, or the E cable coming in from outside. So I'll cover that again in another show on magnetic fields. Then electric fields, just in summary, come from voltage, not current. Magnetic fields are from current, but voltage is what causes electric fields. And these are fields, electric fields come out from unshielded wires like plastic Romex wires in your walls, the circuit, and the cords that you plug in. And they're especially a problem where you sleep and when you sleep. So one of the things that we do is to make sure that the sleeping environment is devoid of electric fields, magnetic fields, radio frequencies, and dirty electricity for all of our clients, whether they're symptomatic or not. And we may actually determine which circuits raise the electric field level where people sleep, and then tell them to shut that circuit off, and there are automatic ways of doing that or convenient ways of doing that from the bedroom. And the value of this is that people sleep more deeply, they make more or release more melatonin in the middle of the night, and they awaken much more refreshed. And it really has a good effect on boosting the benefit from all medical therapies, whether traditional or alternative, to help improve the health of people who are symptomatic, and even improve the quality of life for people who are not, who are otherwise healthy.
I totally agree with that, because it's, you know, we do things, everything that we do either has a positive effect on our bodies and our health and well-being, or a negative effect, and that, or no effect at all. And what we're doing most of the time in our world today is, are things that have negative effects, electromagnetic field exposures being one of them, and that we aren't doing enough positive things to balance it out. And so when we go to the doctor or some kind of practitioner and get some kind of positive health-affirming treatment, if we still are being exposed to toxic chemicals or electromagnetic fields or all those things on the negative side of the ledger, it's going to be more difficult for any kind of treatment to actually improve your health. So this is one of the reasons why it's so important that we understand where these negative effects are, so that we can stop beating our bodies up with them.
Exactly. That's actually the philosophy of our profession, as you well know.
Yes.
Building biology considers the house to be the third skin. You know, we have the skin of our body, our clothes is the second skin or layer that protects us, and then the building enclosure is the third skin, and we want the environment within that to be as healthy as possible.
That's exactly right.
And I do get a lot of referrals from healthcare practitioners in Southern California who have seen that the clients and patients that they've referred to me are getting more improvement from the therapies that they're providing with the addition of the building biology evaluation of the home, whether it's EMFs or indoor air quality. And so that's a lot of my work. I haven't had to advertise 3.5 years.
That's great. That's great. I'm glad that people are recognizing the value of this.
They do. So in regards to this issue, the reason why you had me on is because I sent out a post to the Building Biology website, Yahoo chat group, that was picked up by a gentleman in Montreal, Andre Fachu, who then put it on his blog, and then you saw that, and that's why you called me. What I wrote about was this article that I read in my hometown newspaper, the Los Angeles Times, Sunday morning, which said that the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas was about to begin. And one of the quotes is that by 2050, analysts project there will be 50 billion Internet-connected devices or 5 gadgets for every man, woman, and child in people's homes.
That's amazing.
And they say you're going to see an explosion of devices. Now, I knew this was coming, but I didn't realize it was going to be in tennis rackets and toothbrushes and that sort of thing. I know it's already in wearable wristbands. They call it, like you said in your introduction, the Internet of Everything. And one of the areas that they're pushing into very aggressively technologically is called wearable. Watches, glasses, and so on. And connected cars. You know, so here's the issue that I deal with. Fortunately for me, I'm not personally electrically hypersensitive, but 60 to 70% of my clients are.
Well, so, what does that mean, electrically hypersensitive?
Well, these are people who already have figured out that they have symptoms, and they even may be ill from them. I mean, there's a slight difference. Some people are just sensitive, but they can tolerate these things that they don't feel well when they are near them. There are other people who are frankly ill. So 60 to 70% of my clients are in that large category, and then maybe two-thirds of them are actually ill. These are people who notice that they develop headaches, numbness and tingling, brain fog, lethargy, you know, weakness, and other symptoms that they know are specifically related to one form of EMF or another. Now, interestingly enough, in the last few months, I've figured out that over the years, with as many clients as I've worked with, I have become able to pretty much determine which EMF I'm going to find that will be elevated in their home based on the cluster of symptoms that they tell me about.
Give us an example.
Okay, so people who have radio frequency sensitivity to Wi-Fi to those kinds of devices, cell phones, Wi-Fi, cordless phones, smart meters, they tend to have... they can't sleep, they have numbness and tingling, ringing in the ears, headaches, and agitation, and brain fog. But mostly it's ringing in the ears, headaches, and lethargy or chronic fatigue. Now, someone, on the other hand, who has a strong magnetic field from current on their water pipe under their floor, you know, in the ceiling of their basement or the crawl space of their house, or they have wiring errors when they turn on lights and don't know it, or they have power lines outside, those people tend to have, their immune system just starts to fail. They develop general debilitation over time because it affects their immunity and their vitality. Now, people who have high electric fields, they definitely have insomnia, they have agitation, they're very tired, a lot of chronic fatigue, and they just feel buzzed all the time, especially when they try and sleep. So that points to electric field hypersensitivity, and that can also extend to their laptop if they plug in the power cord with a two-prong plug instead of a three-prong plug, because in the former case, you're ungrounded, in the latter, you're grounded, and that makes a huge difference. So that's another thing we check out. So that gives you an idea of what kind of symptoms people can report.
Well, let's talk about more about these new products that the article talked about.
Well, okay. So this is really a very interesting turn of events. Our profession, me included, we have no problem with the connectivity. We love the connectivity. We love all the conveniences that these things provide. What we don't like is the technology that's used for the communication, the actual radio frequency-based wireless communication. And in fact, research, very extensive research that I suggest that your listeners look at for themselves through my website. What I do is I have lists of links to other websites that have hundreds of studies that document harm to people. Most of the research is done outside the United States, but it's well documented, and countries in around the world outside of the U.S. are actually encouraging people to reduce use of these devices. They're taking Wi-Fi out of schools and hospitals because they see a looming health crisis. Because enough time has elapsed that people are starting to show up with these symptoms and go into health clinics that, of course, these governments pay for. That's how the health care delivery is provided in those countries, we know. And it's not profit-driven. So they have every incentive in the world to get ahead of what they see as the fourth looming health crisis that we've seen in the last century, the first three being asbestos, lead in gasoline or petrol, as they call it, and tobacco. So we're entering the fourth. They've seen this. Before the script before. They don't want to have it go through its full cycle the way it has in the past, so they're trying to get ahead of the curve, and they're taking efforts to reduce these effects. And so I point to that when I have conversations quietly after presentations by electric utility officials on smart meters or people talking about who represent cell phone companies. When they make the claim, as they always do in the United States, that there's no harm from these things because the FCC says that 1 milliwatt per square centimeter is a safe level, but that's only based on thermal heating effects in experiments that were done decades ago with laboratory animals, and they completely have disregarded all this time all of the effects that occur at much lower levels that are non-heating but biological in nature. So the emerging EMF safety community are made up not of engineers and physicists, as in the past, but rather biologists, experimental biologists, who are looking at the effects of these technologies on cells and on tissue functioning at a biological level. And they're seeing a tremendous number of effects on sperm and reproduction, on autism, on genotoxicity, neurotoxicity, just one effect after another, which are well documented. And so I say to these officials and representatives from these companies, why, if what you say is true, that there's no evidence, and they actually make this statement, that there's no evidence that there's any harm below the official threshold level, well, they're lying through their teeth. I hate to say it that way, but they are. Because the problem is the institutions that they look to aren't reporting these effects. Because they look to the EPRI, which is the Electric Power Research Institute in San Francisco, but that's funded by industry, by the electric utility. And they look at the IEEE, the International Electrical and Electronics Engineers, who again say we've reviewed thousands of studies and we find no evidence of any harm. Well, they're just not, you know, they're not reporting on those things that are being reported by others elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
In fact, a Danish study is quoted often that just came out a couple of years ago that showed no significant effect. But now it turns out that in the study, they completely disregarded the class of users that in Denmark that were the heaviest users, which is those individuals who were given cell phones by their company. They were just excluded from the study. And in study after study, there's evidence that they are totally ignoring and withholding information regarding certain tumors. So they're very selective in what they announce, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
So give us some examples of some of the kinds of products that are available now that we should be watching out for. Like one of the ones that you mentioned in your email that went out is Nest, the Nest thermostat. Talk to us about that, because, you know, I was just in, my thermostat broke. Fortunately, it broke at the end of the summer. And so, I mean, right now I don't have heat, but I don't need it for very many days, except for today when I'm sitting on top of a little space heater underneath my desk. But when it comes up, I'm going to have to replace my thermostat before it gets hot because I need my air conditioner here in Florida. And so I was just like looking at the thermostats in Home Depot. And of course, they have a big display for Nest, and I was looking at how cute it looks, and it's got a little leaf, and you know, it helps you save energy and blah blah blah, and I'm going, oh, these are good features, but tell us why.
Well, okay, so first of all, I want to start by saying I have, you know, I don't want to single out any particular company or manufacturer by name, although I did mention that in the email, not knowing I was going to end up on your radio show. But and I'm not opposed to that company in particular or any company for that.
No, neither am I. Neither am I.
I know. I use the cell phone.
It's just an example.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you know, and we're all in favor of technologies that save energy, but so here's the issue. The issue, and it's not their fault. It's the technology that they're harnessing and tapping into, which is the technology for connectivity, and that's Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. So I happen to be few times that I've come across these new digital thermostats in maybe four or five homes out of the, you know, in the last 6 months, I've noticed that I pick up a Wi-Fi signal with the radio frequency detector that I use. I know what devices normally produce those. Cordless phone base units put out not Wi-Fi but another signal, even when you hang up the phone. They fill the room with frequencies on a continuous basis, just like an ashtray with four or five burning lit cigarettes, filling the room with smoke. But you can't see or smell the radio frequency. And it's harmful to everyone on a cellular level, but not everyone is symptomatic from it. So it's really a question of if you're symptomatic, you need to get rid of it and replace it with hardwired alternatives, which we'll talk about in a few minutes in the show here. But if you're not symptomatic and want to be health conscious, then we say to people, I say to my clients, you have to ask yourself, how many cigarettes are you willing to smoke on a daily basis? Because you're exposing yourself to a known toxic agent that does cause harm on a cellular level. That is proven with hundreds and thousands of studies now. So you have to ask yourself, you know, how much exposure are you willing to experience? And we know that people who smoke cigarettes, you know, decades ago, the majority of them did not get ill, but a certain percentage did. So,
and you also don't know, as we saw with cigarettes, that people have to smoke for 30 years, some of them before they get cancer and other problems. We need to go for a break. And you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Orem Miller, certified building biology environmental consultant in Los Angeles. And we're talking about EMFs, and we'll be back after the break to learn more about regular, everyday products that now have these EMFs emitting from them, affecting our health. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Aura Miller, Certified Building Biology Environmental Consultant. And we're talking about all these new products that have Wi-Fi coming out of them and getting into our bodies and emitting all over the place. So, Aura, can you just tell us more about, like, what are some of the different kinds of products? The LA article mentioned tennis rackets and, like, what I think the thing that surprised me, the reason that I mentioned Nest, is because I was looking for a thermostat. It had a lot of great features advertised, and it didn't even occur to me to check and see if it was a wireless device, if there was a radio frequency problem. So I'd like to make sure that our listeners today, by the end of the show, understand what should they be looking for? How should we be alert for not inadvertently buying a product like this if we don't want it?
Well, okay. First of all, you have to make a decision to not want it and to educate yourself, because we know that industry is not going to tell us that these things are bad for you. And unfortunately, the regulatory agencies in our country don't do that either. So you have to go to institutions like the building biology profession and others to look at what Europe is doing. Europe, Israel, Russia, they're taking Wi-Fi out of schools in all of those countries because they know that these things are harmful. So to answer your question, to become educated. I'll go over very quickly in a moment the recommendations that I make and we make as building biologists to our clients for telephones, internet, media, and then, quote, everything else. But they can, besides your cordless phone telephone and the handset that you hold in your hand, the smartphone, the tablet that you have, laptops, the Wi-Fi router, besides those things, you're now seeing Bluetooth and Wi-Fi in thermostats and security systems, when you open and close doors and windows, toothbrushes, tennis rackets, but also in bed sleep sensors. One of the articles mentioned, or actually this was from an NPR piece that I heard a couple days ago. They're monitoring your movement, your heart rate, your respiratory rate, and all that information that is not computed in the device, in the toothbrush or the tennis racket. It's sent wirelessly to your smartphone, and then you have an app that then analyzes this for you and tells you the quality of your stroke for your tennis racket or how deeply you slept, that sort of thing. Now, we don't like electricity in beds at all, so, motorized beds shouldn't be used. So that helps improve your sleep from that standpoint. But
so it would be if the product is advertising something like it's collecting information and sending it to your smartphone, or that you can change your thermostat from your smartphone while you're away from your home, or something like that.
In terms of all the benefits that any particular company has come up with for programmable thermostats, it's just the Nest company has gone much farther than that. I read an article about that company in particular, and I was very impressed as a building biologist in terms of what they are thinking of and providing through their technology. So all we say is then just have it connected to your furnace through a hardwired, through a wire, a low-voltage wire like we've done for decades. In fact, our guiding principle is, number one, does any device have the capacity to provide and convey information in a hardwired way? So like
good point.
There are models, there are devices that you can buy to go in your entertainment center and directly connect to your TV set that get a wireless signal from your router in another room, and then you can stream movies and shows through networks that are coming up that way with these, Roku and Netflix and Android/Google. They're all coming up with, and Apple, they're all coming up with their own TV networks conduits for providing content. So all we and one of these devices, the Roku device, I believe, has an Ethernet port, and so you can put an Ethernet cable in there. And I believe that I remember reading a week or two ago from a client saying that they checked with one of these manufacturers and were told that if you plug in an Ethernet cable, that turns off the Wi-Fi because it can't do both. It has to do one or the other. So my criteria for a laptop or a router is when you plug in an Ethernet cable, that's only half the job. You have your connectivity now, but you have to shut off the Wi-Fi manually on your laptop and on your router, because otherwise that still is transmitted on a continuous basis, even though you're connected with an Ethernet cable.
Oh, good tip.
Now you can have an Ethernet cable in the walls, in the crawl space, in the attic, in the basement, or you can get network extenders if you're not overly electrically hypersensitive. Netgear and other manufacturers make non-Wi-Fi network extenders where you plug a little device into an outlet in the room with the router, and there's a port on the side for an Ethernet cable, and they actually provide 2 6-foot Ethernet cables in the box. So you plug an Ethernet cable, the Ethernet cable from the router to the little device that you plug in that room, and then any other room in the house, you plug in the other device to an outlet, electrical outlet in any other room in the house, and have an Ethernet cable to your computer up there using the circuitry of the house to convey the Internet signal if you can't put in an Ethernet cable, because that can be very expensive. Or you can do this over the cable as well, the TV cable, even if you're running TV stations, or signals. So these are called network extenders. So there are technologies to provide high-speed, safe, secure, non-hackable Internet connectivity in your home and have what we call a local area hardwired local area network as opposed to a wireless network in the home. Now, the only problem with that is that your tablet's not going to be able to pick up a signal because you can't get on the Internet with tablets unless you have the Microsoft brand, the Surface, the new Surface that's out now. It's a tablet. That's the brand name that they have. Not the Basic, but the Surface Pro and the Surface 2 have, not only do they have a USB port, so does the Basic model, but the Surface Pro and Surface 2 are programmed to be able to handle the Internet through an adapter that you plug into the USB port and then has an Ethernet port on the other end of that little 6-inch adapter into which you plug an Ethernet cable, and now you can put that tablet on airplane mode and be connected to the Internet with the tablet. But what we don't want people to do is moms should not be putting a tablet in front of their child, the young child, to pacify them and have them watch a movie without putting it in airplane mode. Because if they don't, that tablet, just like your smartphone, is putting out a signal looking for a Wi-Fi router, even if it doesn't even exist in the house. And somehow they're connected maybe by 3G or 4G directly to the tower. But the point is, you know, these things, these tablets and smartphones, put out a signal looking for a Wi-Fi router, and in the case of smartphones, looking for the cell tower or from the beacon signal every few seconds, every few minutes, in the case of the beacon signal for the cell tower, and people don't even notice. So if you have your cell phone as your alarm clock, it's sending out a signal every few minutes looking for the tower or to tell the tower that it's here and ready for a call, and you need to put it in airplane mode when you have that thing near your head or as an alarm clock. These are all tips that are on my website and that we educate our clients about.
I think these are very important because we don't know, and it's just another stress on your body to be exposed to these
right.
Electromagnetic and radio fields that makes it more difficult to live in a toxic world and process those toxic chemicals. And it's a stress on your body in its own right. We only have about 2 minutes left.
Okay.
So is there something that you want to make sure that you say today that you haven't yet said?
Yes. In general, people should follow the principle that we recommend for radio frequency exposure, and that is reduce use and increase distance. So if you can apply those rules or those principles, you'll go a long way towards improving your health. For instance, we tell people to give out their home number, keep their landline, get a corded telephone, not a cordless telephone, and give their home number to their friends and family and say, call that number first. And then use that phone to make outgoing calls. just generally reduce the number of cigarettes you're smoking per day, if you want to use that analogy.
Well, that's exactly what I do. That is exactly what I do.
Good.
And I have a cell phone, but I don't answer it when I'm at home. And I tell people, don't call me on my cell phone. Call my corded phone first.
And I only use
the cell phone I carry it when I'm traveling and things like that.
Well, good for you. So you've reduced your exposure to these things.
And I also have on my phone, I have a Pong case, P-O-N-G, that blocks. Well, that's a whole story. I shouldn't use the word block, but it redirects the signal.
I am in favor of these chips and pendants and Pong cases and other technologies that reduce the influence of these negative influence of these technologies on the body. But we don't recommend them in my profession as primary way of protecting oneself.
I totally agree. And I'm sorry again to interrupt you, but the music's going to come on. We're going to be done. And I want to make sure that I say thank you so much for being on. And everybody can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. And Orem will be on again and we'll continue this conversation. You're listening to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. I'm Deborah Lindad.